Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Red Fox Blogger with your host, Kel Fritzy. She's the infidel your imam warned you about, and there's no holding her back as she shares her opinions, insights, information, and outrage discussing the political entity known as Islam. We are at a critical juncture in our history, and if the threat of Islam is not faced up front, right now, then we will lose the freedoms of individuality, civic justice, and autonomy of thought we rightly enjoy, and instead see our values replaced with kinetic and civilizational jihad, Sharia law, and oppression permanently. Don't let the memory of our soldiers, past and present, go in vain. It is up to us to protect the legacy for which they fought so hard. We have an obligation to honor their memory today and for future generations. Join Kel Mondays at 3 p.m. Eastern and Fridays at 7 p.m. Eastern on Blog Talk Radio. But leave your political correctness well away from her phone lines and chat room. And be warned, Kel takes no prisoners.
GoDamnMedia.com.
Changes. We are justified in doing anything we can to survive.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome. How you doing? How you doing tonight? Welcome to the Red Fox Blogger. It's your host, Kel Fritzy. Okay, I'm knocking it off. I'm just kidding. Welcome to the Red Fox Blogger with your host, Kel Fritzy and Tim Burton. Okay. No, it's funny. I was on the a telephone conversation, and I'm always fascinated that I have to get in touch with a lot of people internationally. And one person I had to get in touch with today was in Australia, and he's the leader of the Australian Defense League. And I'm setting up a time for him to come on air on East Anglian EDL radio show, right? So you know the time differences. The poor gentleman, he's in his pajamas. So it's like, what are you wearing? I'm really sorry for that. Oh, God, I hope he's not listening. And you won't believe what I was doing just before I came to air. I got a missive from Pamela Geller, and she's having problems once again, and this time it's in Boston, and that is her entitlement. I think it's an entitlement to place her anti-jihadist blogs on the buses. But Boston Transit's rejection of the AFDI's advertisements is only a viewpoint-based, but it also fails to pass the mustard test. This is unreasonable, ladies and gentlemen. They have rejected Pamela Geller and Robert Spencer's their latest advertisements on the buses in the city of Boston. So Pamela Geller is waiting for a ruling for that. But what I did is that I have put it in the chat. I'll put it in the chat room. What I've done, though, is I've put it on the Red Fox Blogger blog. And you can go and check it out, archive listeners, later on. But I'll put it in the chat room right now. Hang on. And part of my voice, I have been chatting all day, and I'm losing my voice, but that's okay. I want to stop rambling, though. I just wanted to get that out. I was actually in contact with Pamela Geller about 10 minutes before this show came to air, so I was doing a bit of a scramble. I want to welcome you all here, and so does Tim Burton. We have a very, very important topic to discuss with you today, and that is the Islamic four-point plan and that ramification and what it means in the West. And Tim, hello, how are you?
Good evening, Kellon. Very well, and how are you? I've actually got a chat room up and in my view at the moment, which is something I don't normally get on a Monday evening. So I was just wondering what I owe this to. Obviously, there has been some sort of change because I have terrible trouble sometimes getting this chat room up and running, especially with the Red Fox Blogger Show. I've no idea why that has been the problem, but it's not a problem tonight, so I guess if it ain't broke, let's not fix it.
I'm really sick and tired of Blog Talk Radio reinventing the wheel.
Oh, really, Kel? You haven't told us about this before. Would you like to explain a little more?
God. Ladies and gentlemen, every time Blog Talk Radio upgrades, they kind of move things around, and it makes it very difficult for the radio hosts. Their shows are not shared. The listeners are not getting their email alerts that Tim and myself, for example, are on Monday afternoons at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. No, they're not getting those. And people cannot access the chat room. Oh, my God, Tim. I have sent so many tickets to Blog Talk Radio about this issue. I mean, it's just maddening.
I don't know if it's a combination of things or not, because one of the things I've had to do is completely reload a new laptop with all the software I currently use for reasons which I won't go into at the moment. It could be anything to do with the version of Skype that I'm using, the various patches that Windows, Microsoft puts out for their upgrades every week. It could be a whole bunch of things, and I don't know that this particular problem I've been having is specifically Blog Talk Radio, but I do know that you've had all sorts of issues with Blog Talk Radio. So when in doubt,
it's been terrible. And, you know, you're a computer programmer, and you do this for a living, and I truly appreciate your suggestion that I simply have to upgrade my software, and Apple is always after me. You have to upgrade now, Cal. You have to upgrade, and I think that's half the problems that I'm experiencing. And I was trying to book the show last night, Tim, for us to do today, and I was sitting there until 1 o'clock in the morning, and it would not accept my offer for doing the show for today. And I finally gave up in frustration, and I went to bed. And ladies and gentlemen, I inboxed him this morning, and I said, finally, the episode is there. And it's like, oh, my God. I was going to throw my computer out the window, and I thought, oh, you know what? I can't do that. Love my Apple. I love my computer.
I mean, you know, not only that, if you throw it out the window, you can cause all sorts of damage to the wildlife. And I know you've got a garden full of ducks at the moment. In fact, I can hear one of them going, "Hello, Quackbar!
Hello, Quackbar! Oh,
hello,
God!"
Quackbar.
We do.
You know,
we have the feeder set up in the backyard, Tim. And oh my gosh, the juncos are coming back, and the cardinals are there. I was looking out the kitchen window, and there is my cardinals. Mr. and Mrs. Cardinal are back, and the juncos are back, and the morning doves are back. It is just delightful. Yes, I'm really enjoying my garden. I'm enjoying my back garden big time. And we got snow finally.
I had a cardinal in my back garden. I used to call him Richelieu, Cardinal Richelieu. But I don't know where he's got off to. But yeah, you know that duck, the one that goes, "Hello, Quackbar." You know what
Quackbar.
No, that is, don't you? That's Gaddafi duck.
Gaddafi duck. Oh, Tim. Do I have to shoo you out of the cat box? The cat flap, rather.
Yeah.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, Tim Burton, a.k.a. Cat Strangler 101, Red Fox Blogger, is shooing him out the cat door. If he can fit through.
Well, yeah, I've been having a bit of trouble lately. I think somebody's fattening me up for Christmas. That's the problem.
Oh, cat Ella, no. You know what? If anybody goes near my dear Cat Strangler 101, they're going to have to deal with a very, very, very mad fox.
Yeah, but, you tell them, Kel.
Oh, hey, Tim, I've got your furry back. Don't worry about it.
That's what I like to hear.
But today we want to present to you the first stages of Islamic conquest. And if you're not aware, well, Tim and my listeners, they're a prize. They're very smart. And what Tim and myself strive to do every Monday is give you further homework. We're not the be-all to end-all. We are a conduit in that we share a message with you. And today, Tim and myself, we're going to be discussing the four stages of Islamic conquest. This is something you should be absolutely apprised of. And I want Tim to start taking it away. I'm going to open up with stage one, and Tim will take it from there. Stage one is infiltration. Muslims began moving into non-Muslim countries in increasing numbers, and the beginning of cultural conflicts are visible through often subtle. They are often subtle, but they're there. You know, the first migration wave, for example, to non-Muslim host countries, appeal to humanitarian tolerance from the host country, attempts to portray Islam as a peaceful and a Muslim as a victim of misunderstanding and racism, even though Islam is not a race. We know that. What about the high Muslim birth rate in host countries? And they increase the Muslim population. That, however, is not quite a concern with Tim and myself. The birth rate, yes, that is something that we have to think about. But the concern is not the birth rate so much as the ideology that follows. What do you think, Tim?
Well, obviously, the ideology is the major problem, because if it weren't for the ideology, we could accept increasing numbers of immigrants into this country and expect that they would, in time, integrate and assimilate into Western countries, as indeed previous generations of immigrants from different parts of the world with different belief systems have managed to do successfully. It's only when you start talking about Islam that you have a problem. So if you didn't have that ideology, yeah, a lot of these problems wouldn't exist. I mean, whenever you have a sharp increase in an alien population, there
yeah.
will always be conflicts of some sort, because the very fact that the culture is not identical to ours means that differences have to be worked out. But with goodwill on both sides, a little bit of government money here and there to ease the path and assuage people's ruffled feelings. And I'm not just talking about immigrants, I'm talking about the indigenous populations. You know, if they feel that they're getting some benefits from having those immigrants in their native country, then they're not going to be too concerned. All right, they may not look the same as you, they may eat peculiar food, you know, they may do a few things slightly differently. They may have some practices which you find distasteful. I can't think of specific examples at the moment, but nevertheless, as long as the expectation is that they assimilate and integrate in due course, nobody is particularly worried. But of course, when you bring in Islam into the equation, then all these bets go out of the window. Now, just before I expand a little bit further, what I want to do is to put into a chat room a link which comes from a chap called Dr. Peter Hammond, and he documents
he's brilliant.
He documents what happens as the this is specifically to do with Muslim populations, what happens when you introduce Muslims into a native or indigenous population.
Mm-hmm.
When they're about 1% or so, nobody minds very much. They're seen as a colourful, exotic contribution to the multicultural rainbow and the ethnic diversity of your country, and everybody feels good about it. Once you start getting above about 1%, and these figures aren't cast in stone, but they mm-hmm. are close enough to be able to see the exact same patterns in pretty much every Western country where Muslims have been allowed to immigrate. And I won't read out all the things that Dr. Peter Hammond says, but the point is that as the population increases, so do the problems that are encountered by the indigenous people of that country.
Exactly. And we're witnessing that, of course, you being in England and myself being in Canada and the United States as well, Australia, New Zealand, when we see the increase in the percentages of Islamists, and I'm sorry, if you're a Muslim and you're offended by that phrase, it's your problem, because you own it. You're not taking responsibility for your so-called religion. This is a political ideology spreading, and the caliphate is spreading. It started, we stopped the caliphate in Turkey in World War I, and you know what? We're going to stop it again. So, Tim, I have no qualms about calling them what they are. And you're right. Uh-huh. We're seeing the percentages here in Canada, the United States, England, all over the place.
Well, we are because, as I'm sure our listeners know, once you get Muslims into the population, they, because of their culture, tend to have more children than the indigenous Western cultures do. Now,
mm-hmm.
we're for various reasons, the indigenous Western population is not reproducing anywhere near as fast as the Muslim population, and you can argue the point as to why that might be, and that would make a good discussion for a separate radio show. But the fact is, that is what's happening. Now, if the Muslim population, the birth rate and the demographics were virtually the same as the indigenous population, again, it wouldn't be a tremendous, it wouldn't be such the problem that it is. But because they're increasing very rapidly, we see mm-hmm. that the associated problems due to non-integration and non-assimilation are increasing rapidly as well. Now, while Dr. Peter Hammond is just talking about percentages and what happens as you move up 3 or 4 percentage points at a time, you can start to see quite distinct patterns developing. And you might look at that and say, oh, okay, well, those are patterns developing, but what do they mean? And this is where tonight's show really comes into it, because they're all part, you can subdivide it into stages of Islamic conquest, which is what we're going to do tonight, because the ultimate goal of Muslims, whenever they come to a society or any Western society, their ultimate goal is not to come as friends in order to integrate and assimilate. Their goal is to come as conquerors. And while they don't come in brandishing scimitars and shouting Allah Akbar all the time when they first come in, okay, they are clever enough in their way in order to present a very friendly face when they first arrive in your country. And, you know, it sneaks up on you, but it sneaks up on you in such a way that it almost seems unreasonable for the tolerant people in Western societies to actually say, well, hold on a minute, you know, what's happening here? We don't like this. Let's put a stop to it. And all of a sudden, that attitude seems to be unreasonable, because in conjunction mm-hmm. with the increasing Muslim population is political pressure for the indigenous population not to say anything about it, or not to say anything about it that isn't positive. So the Muslim populations increase unimpeded, and our ability to actually comment about this and say, well, hold on a minute, we didn't ask for this, and it's bringing with it a lot of negative issues. And of course, as the population starts to increase more and more, those negative issues come to the forefront more and more, until you get to the point where and that doesn't have to be a very big point in the population percentage, where you say there's hardly anything good about it at all, and it's nearly all negative.
Exactly, Tim. And this is only stage one.
Well,
like,
indeed.
We're seeing this. And this is only, and Tim and myself, we're going to dissect the first stages in 4 parts, obviously. After the top of the hour, we're going to take a break. But right now we're discussing stage one, and that is infiltration, and that's when Muslims begin moving into non-Muslim countries. And Tim, what you are relating is absolutely correct, in that they do start making a few noises. Well, they actually start that in the stage two, and that is the consolidation of power. We'll get into that. But what worries me, Tim, is what you're saying, is that they're demanding special dispensation already at this point, and the high Muslim birth rates.
Well, yes, because as I say, when they're only about 1% of the population, they don't do that. They are, I won't say they're happy to sort of appear friendly on the surface. I'm sure some of them a 1% level, you get enough of them who do integrate and assimilate and learn to speak English, and they get a job, and they're generally law-abiding, and they might move into a house next to you or down your street, and their children are brought up, and they play with yours, and they go to the same schools, and you might say, hey, I know some nice Muslims. These are really nice people. How can you possibly tar them all with the same brush? And, of course, that is to miss the point, which is to look back in history, which is what we're doing, and saying, what is the pattern? What is the pattern? What happens when it gets above 1%? Is it just that the numbers increase? Well, no, it isn't. When the numbers increase, the dynamics change. The paradigm, if you like, of the relationship between the Muslim and the non-Muslim population changes significantly. But at the stage one infiltration stage, what they do is to try not to rock the boat too much. They come in increasing numbers, it's true, and they have a lot more children, it's true. But they don't go out of their way, when they're still only about 1% of the population, to cause trouble which might be deemed any kind of a threat to society. They get in, they establish themselves, they become a relatively non-threatening part of the population at 1%. Nobody really minds very much. You know, people look and see what they bring with them, which might be one of the obvious ones over here is the cuisine. We have curry houses which have come from the Asian subcontinent. Indian and Pakistani curry houses are virtually on every corner of every high street here in England. And nobody has a great deal bad to say about it at that level,
they're just being little noisemakers, and what they're doing with my friend Ezra Levant, for example, they're threatening legal action for any perceived discrimination, and Tim, and I hope I'm not throwing you off your game, but this point in stage one, the infiltration, this one really, really floored me. Offers of interfaith dialogue to indoctrinate non-Muslims.
Well, I mean, certainly in the UK, we're seeing pretty much every one of those individual bullet points we are seeing here in the UK. I mean, I'm sure you would probably confirm that at the levels that you have in Canada, which I believe is around about 3% mark, would I be right in saying around about that in Canada?
I believe we are at 1.9%.
Okay. Well, okay. But we're certainly seeing all the things, all those bullet points we're seeing here in the UK. And as you say, the interfaith dialogue one is one which many, particularly Christian communities, have bought into, because they, being Christians, they want to be seen to be tolerant and peaceful. People have almost forgotten what it's like to be a Christian. The idea is that, yes, you're broadly peaceful, but that's not to say that you don't fight against evil. And the Christians that we have over here have bought into the how good it is to be nice and peaceful and tolerant bit, but they seem to have forgotten all about how important it is to fight against evil when you see it. And what we see, and the patterns of history give us a clue here as to what we can expect to see in the future, what we are seeing is the rise of something absolutely evil, and something which will completely destroy our relatively peaceful and tolerant societies here in the West. Now, before I go any further, I should say nobody is arguing, I'm sure we're not arguing, that our societies are perfect, because I don't think anybody could put their hand on their heart and say that they are. They are man-made structures, but they have been developed over time, and they work fairly well, or pretty well on the whole, for most people most of the time. Not perfect, but for most people most of the time. And that situation has never been achieved on such a large scale any time in history, unless somebody cares to correct me. I don't believe that's the case. So what we have developed through largely our Judeo-Christian principles is a series of Western societies, which together comprise Western civilization, which is actually unique in its way, in that it does give a lot of advantages to a lot of people a lot of the time. I'd say most people most of the time. And all right, there may be some people who fall through the cracks, and I'm not talking about it's perfect. I'm not saying it's perfect for everybody, but for most of the time, for most people, it works well. Now, when we've experienced a large period of a large amount of time has gone past, especially in the UK, where we haven't actually been involved in a major war in this country. I'm not talking about local conflicts like the Falkland Islands,
yeah,
which we've
had
in the 70s, and the troubles that we've had in Ireland, Northern Ireland, in the sort of 70s and 80s. But I'm talking about war on the level that we had it during the Second World War, when we were at war with Germany and we actually had bombs falling on our cities. We haven't experienced that for about 70 or 80 years. So it's easy to forget for our generation. It's easy to forget what evil.
Oh yeah, and the thing is that you don't have bombs falling on your cities anymore. You just have them exploding within your institutions.
Well, yes, we do.
And buses.
That's slightly different, isn't it?
7-7. Never forget 7-7, people.
Well, no, that's true. But what I'm saying is that the war that we're currently fighting is completely different from the war that was being fought 70 years ago. Now,
exactly.
Well, the point I was coming to, sorry about this, Gail, is that because of this, a lot of people tend to think, especially Christians here in our country, and I'm sure it's true throughout the West, that we have actually reached the ability where we're never going to have to fight another war, because the worst thing that ever happened was the Second World War back in the 1940s, and all right, we won that against Germany, and because of that, we haven't had to fight a war for 70 years. And it's easy to get into the mindset that, you know, everything else can be negotiated with and compromised. We're never going to have to fight another hot war or any kind of war at all. And people look at our civilization and they think, people living in it, think that it's a strong and enduring thing that's made out of, almost as if it's made out of bricks and mortar, and nothing will ever cause it to crumble. But in fact, nothing could be further from the truth, because when you're faced with an enemy like the Islamic ideology, you don't want to think of your own civilization as being absolutely impregnable, because it isn't. You should think of it much more like a delicate flower that needs protection from the sun and the high winds and the tornadoes, the scorching sun of the summer, the bitter frosts and the freezing snows of the winter. That civilization has to be protected against all those predations and the barbarians at the gate, okay, which is what we have at the moment. And if we're at the moment, we're allowing the barbarians through the gate, and they will destroy that civilization from within unless we stop it now. And we have to do it, because they won't. They've got no incentive to stop doing what they're doing, because what they're doing works. We have to wake everybody up here and make them aware of the situation so that we can halt and reverse this problem while we still have time before demographics overtake us.
I want to expand on that. I kind of stepped on you a little bit there. And
oh, that's all right, Gail. Carry on.
But, yeah, I know. I'm the Mad Fox, and people expect that of me anyway, malapropisms and everything. When we were talking about the interfaith dialogue, and I put the passage in the chat room about how many nations are suffering from Islamic infiltration. One, a handful, nearly every nation. The Islamic leadership, quote unquote, of the Muslim Brotherhood and others wish to dissolve each nation's sovereignty and replace it with the global imposition of Islamic Sharia law. Sharia law based on the Quran, Surah, the Hadith, and they condemn liberty and they forbid equality and is inconsistent with the laws of Western nations. And this is absolutely true, Tim, is that they do not recognize man-made law. They certainly do not recognize the Magna Carta, which is a global, how should I put this? It's been adopted globally, the Magna Carta, and England gave that to the West. And
yes,
they won't recognize it, Tim. We see these people coming up, these attempted Shahids, for example, who want to blow things up. And they're caught, and they're sitting in a courtroom, and they want to be tried under Sharia law.
Yes, indeed. Well, what they want and what they get are obviously going to be two different things, but we should never lose sight of what they are actually telling us. Our political elites and the mainstream media would like us to ignore what those people themselves are telling us. They're saying quite clearly and quite openly that the law that everybody should be governed by is Sharia law, and that man-made law is of no consequence, and they don't consider themselves to be bound by it. Now, if you want a little more proof of that, what I would suggest is, and I don't wish you that you should do this right now, because it's an aside, but I was looking today at the trial of the murderers of Lee Rigby, which is taking place in London, and on this link that I'm currently giving you are actually live updates that have been taking place today. As they happen in the courtroom, you can see what's developing is the one of the murderers, Michael Adebolajo, I believe his name is saying quite clearly, quite candidly, quite openly, for anybody with the brains to understand and the eyes to see, that Islam was his motivation, and Allah expects that Muslims are being wronged in any way, then the soldiers of Allah, and he considers himself to be a soldier of Allah, will work on Allah's behalf to exact reparations. And if it involves killing British soldiers on British streets, then that is a perfectly acceptable course of action, and it's totally justified by Islam. And where David Cameron, our beloved Prime Minister, says that this has got nothing to do with Islam at all, David Cameron is quite wrong. This chap is saying quite clearly the laws of Allah, the words in the Quran, the example of the Prophet Muhammad, all leads to the course of action that any devout Muslim, every devout Muslim for that matter, should do if he's physically able to do so, which is to fight the infidel, take the war to him in his own land if he can, and do exactly what he did.
Exactly. And for David Cameron to come out with that statement on the very same day, it's disconcerting, because he is a federal politician, and he is feeding into the first stage of the Islamic infiltration. And just to remind our listeners, Tim and myself, we're discussing the trial that is underway right now, and the two Michaels, and the one Michael is Adebolajo, and the other one is Adebolawale.
And I've just put the link
and,
to the chat room
yes,
now.
And they said it when they slaughtered drummer Lee Rigby on the streets in London in May of 2013. They said that this had everything to do with Islam. And David Cameron, the British Prime Minister, came on the air that same day and said this had nothing to do with Islam. And we obviously know it was.
Well, indeed. I mean, the thing we have to do is make everybody else aware of it. Now, Remy Soldier has put a couple of comments into the chat room saying it is a problem convincing the population, which is true. And he says, in reality, I can't think of how the current situation can be reversed. Well, unless you wake up the population so that they take steps to throw out the existing dhimmi government that we have, and take steps in such a way that it's not replaced by another dhimmi government, then yes, it'll be difficult to say how the current situation could be reversed. But given enough people who understand the reality of the situation, it can be done. And I'm, as I always say, I'm confident that it can be done. No matter how bleak things look at the moment, we do have a window of opportunity and we do have the tools that we need in order to make that awareness come about. And once the awareness has come about and we have reached a tipping point, we can make a difference. But I agree, right this second, if you had a vote tomorrow, a general election tomorrow, we would not, in my view, get any kind of government in place that would take the kind of steps that, need to be taken.
Yeah.
All right, 18 months is our next general election. 18 months is a long time in politics. We have the opportunity to make
a
difference.
Oh, yeah, and absolutely. And Reema Soldier, pardon me, he brings up a really good point, and you reiterated that, Tim, in that it's easy to come up with a plan, but in reality, will a plan ever be implemented? But the thing is, ladies and gentlemen, you have to be the citizen journalist, and you have to write your politicians and tell them what you're witnessing. Well, Tim and myself, we're so sick and tired of seeing the, for example, the Muslim patrol groups running around in Luton, and in Canada we have them in Toronto. In the United States, they have them in Dearborn. We're sick of it, and this is only stage one. Tim, I
yes,
think
indeed.
We should move into stage two.
Okay, all right, fine. Well, we've talked about what happens when Muslims start to immigrate to the host country. We get appeals for humanitarian
That's
tolerance.
Right.
We start to notice the high birth rate. We start to get calls to criminalize Islamophobia as a hate crime. We're seeing all those threatened legal action. Interfaith dialogue. As I say, Christians seem to have forgotten that in addition to being nice and tolerant of incoming people and welcoming them into our countries, we must also be prepared to fight evil when we see it. And a lot of Christians seem to have forgotten that side of the well, I won't say the bargain, because it's not a bargain exactly, but it's part and parcel of being a Christian. It's good that we are generally peaceful and tolerant, and we embody goodness in comparison to, for example, what Islam embodies. But that's not to say that we can just put down our swords and beat them all into plowshares when there is a war to be fought. And there is a war to be fought, and unless we fight it, all the good things that our ancestors fought for and died for over the past few centuries will have been for nothing. And I just think that would be a terrible shame. And that's my understatement of the decade, I suppose. But nevertheless, I can't
think of anything more. Oh, I think it's a brilliant understatement. And I think you're right on the money there. And let people know that we are moving into stage two of Islamic infiltration. And that's a consolidation of power. And I'm going to shoot to the listeners something that they can ponder. The Muslim immigrants in host country converts continue demands for accommodation in employment, education, social services, financing, and courts. And the bullet points here is proselytizing increases establishment and recruitment of jihadi cells, efforts to convert alienated segments of the population to Islam, and please take that in parentheses, your prisons and your public schools. Revisionist efforts to Islamize history, and we are seeing that in the textbook that arose in Florida, World History. Efforts to destroy historic evidence that revealed true Islamism, increased anti-Western propaganda and psychological warfare. Yes, we are seeing that. Efforts to recruit allies who share similar goals, communists, anarchists, for example. Attempts to indoctrinate children to Islamic viewpoints. And Tim and I talked about that last week. And
about the
public school that wanted to take their children on an Explore Islam workshop. There you go.
Yes.
There's increased efforts to intimidate, silence, and eliminate non-Muslims. Efforts to introduce blasphemy and hate laws in order to silence critics. And hello, bingo! We are seeing that in the United Nations under 16-18.
Yes, indeed.
You know what? Tim, take it away, because I'm losing my cool again.
Okay, well, while Kel goes off to get her Valium and Mogadon, I'll carry on with that. The efforts to introduce blasphemy and hate laws in order to silence critics, as Kel so rightly said, that's culminating in a big effort by the OIC at the United Nations to introduce Resolution 1618. Now, they've already got it passed in a non-binding form, and having got that far, they're now proceeding with the efforts to make it law. And if it ever comes about and we're unable to criticise Islam in any way, shape or form, then it's going to be extremely difficult for us to resolve this particular situation in a peaceful fashion. Now, before I go on to the other bullet points that are listed here, I'd just like to go back to something that Remy Soldier said in the chat room, which is, do we think we'll need to witness more major Islamic atrocities before the tide turns? Will we have to feel the pain before people wake up in sufficient numbers? And the answer
yeah,
to that, I think,
exactly.
is...
Exactly.
Yes,
and Tim, I think you should. I think you should, because what Rem Soldier brought up was a very, very salient point. And I'm going to mute myself and let you carry on with it, because I think it's brilliant. And thanks, Rem Soldier, for that.
I think Remy Soldier's got a very good point. We may well have to experience very bad things before sufficient numbers of people wake up. Now, that's not an ideal situation. What I would like to be able to do is put a letter through everybody's letterbox tomorrow morning saying, this is the situation with Islam. I'm sure you'll all agree with me when I've read my letter, and please form an orderly queue to help me fight this problem. And if everybody agreed to that, I'm sure it would be wonderful. But that isn't going to happen. It is going to take a lot more pain, and we have to be ready for that. We're not going to wake everybody overnight. And during the course of our efforts, I'm sure Muslims or Islamic groups will cause one or more atrocities to happen. I hate to say it, but they only have to be lucky once. Our intelligence services and the people mm-hmm. who work tirelessly on our behalf 24/7 in order to stop these things happening, they have to be lucky all the time. But the Islamists themselves only have to be lucky once. And that's why I say I think the likelihood, the probability of an atrocity on the scale of 7-7, I hesitate to say maybe even on the scale of 9-11 or worse, but you cannot rule these things out. And it might take something like that before we reach our tipping point. But sooner or later, I'm anticipating sooner rather than later, we will reach a tipping point. But having dealt with that comment from Remy Soldier, I'll carry on with those other bullet points which you were talking about. So we were just talking about hate laws and blasphemy laws.
Tim, I've got them right in front of me. And yes, we were talking about the prophesizing and the efforts to convert alienated segments. Yes. Continue focus on enlarging Muslim population by increasing Muslim births and immigration. Use of charities. And this is where CARE, an unindicted co-conspirator in the Holy Land Foundation, comes in. And our American listeners, they don't need a whole lot of explanation for that. We have very smart listeners. Use of charities to fund jihad. And we're talking about the lesser jihad, folks. We're not talking about the higher jihad. We're talking about the lesser jihad. That's the kinetic jihad. Convert efforts to bring about the destruction of host society from within. Development of Muslim political base in non-Muslim host society. Islamic financial networks to fund political growth. Acquisition of land. Be highly visible. And assassinate those critics aimed to intimidate the opposition of Islam.
Yeah.
Tolerance of non-Muslim diminishes.
Yep, okay. I was just going to say, I can think of some examples only this week in my local area where Islamic financial networks have acquired a lot of land in the Midlands in a little town called Kidderminster, and they're building a new shopping mall there that's going to be an entirely Sharia-compliant shopping mall in the middle of England in Kidderminster. Now, that's a little town in Worcestershire, only about half an hour's drive from where I live. So it is happening, folks. It is happening. It's happening all around us. I just wanted to, as you were going through each of those bullet points, and I was thinking of specific things that are happening, I just wanted to give listeners a heads up there. But, you were talking about the assassination of critics aimed to intimidate opposition. Well, we can already think of things like that in Holland with Theo van Gogh.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Theo van Gogh, the grandnephew of the prolific painter. And, there is a pattern there. I mean, Theo van Gogh, he was murdered in the streets. He was murdered in Netherlands for what? Insulting Islam. The Organization of Islamic Conference. They're demanding anti-blasphemy laws. But they are, and the United Nations is embracing their proposals. But people don't understand, and I say this time and time and time again. You have to understand what 1618 means. What it means is that the Organization of the Islamic Cooperation or Conference, it demands, a stop to terrorism, but they are covering it under Sharia law, and the terrorists they want to stop is us, the infidel.
Oh, indeed. If they can get away with that, then our ability to respond is greatly reduced. The next couple of points here more or less go together. The next two bullet points, which is tolerance of non-Muslims diminishes and greater demands to adopt strict Islamic conduct. Well, I've only got to mention the words Tower Hamlets to you, where Sharia patrols have been going around the streets telling non-Muslims what they can and can't do in the streets, especially after dark. No drinking, no holding hands, stuff like that. All right, we have had a couple of people jailed just this week for that sort of conduct, which is a good thing, but nevertheless,
I was so thrilled to see the gingerhead was arrested.
Indeed, yeah, the ginger winger, as I always call him.
Yeah, ginger winger.
He
is such an idiot. He looks absolutely ridiculous in his caftan. Walking around the streets of London in his cap. Oh my gosh, this guy is.
But
he's one of the blokes that tried to chat up the most popular girl in high school, but had a booger showing from his nose.
Indeed, but I think what we have to remember is, all right, we've got these guys off the streets. There were two people who were named and that wasn't. Three guys off the streets, which is good, but the threat is still there. The ideology has not changed, and it's only going to be a matter of time before more Muslim Sharia patrols spring up, and the opposition to the genuine police force that tries to enforce British law on the streets becomes stronger, and eventually you'll get no-go zones like we do currently in France, where the police will not enter those zones without military escort. Firemen and ambulance crews are regularly stoned. This is France I'm talking about. And the zones are so unruly that they are listed on maps. There's about 700-800 of them in France, or at least there was the last time I looked. They're classified as ZUS, which stands in French for sensitive urban zones, which is... Well, sensitive is putting it mildly. If you go in there and you're a non-Muslim and you're on your own, don't be surprised if bad things happen to you. It's like the Wild West, and there is absolutely no semblance of Western law apparent in these zones. And we're starting to see similar no-go zones springing up. We all know about Tower Hamlets. It's happening where I live too in Birmingham. There are areas of Birmingham where, again, if you're alone a non-Muslim male. It doesn't really matter so much if you're white or not. This will happen to you if you're black. If you're non-Muslim and perceived as non-Muslim, you will be threatened if you go into these zones, especially after dark.
Oh, yeah.
On your own.
Yeah.
And people have had very serious injuries happen to them. I'm not aware of anybody actually having been killed as a result, but it's only a matter of time. And that's in Britain's second city, by which I mean second largest city. And it's,
oh,
it's,
yeah, well, that ties into our stage two. And that,
yes,
one of the bullet stage points two. Is the greater demands to adopt strict Islamic conduct, and that's the no-go zones. I mean, this is just absolute insanity, in that the gingerhead who was arrested he was convicted this week of proselytizing anti-Christian sentiment, I suppose. But plastering up all those stickers, this is a Sharia zone, and you cannot do this here, you cannot do that here. And these, the gangs that would assault people coming home from the pubs with maybe they had a little sack of wine with them that they were going to enjoy later on at home, and they were assaulted.
Yes, and we are going to see more of that if our police forces do not take a stronger line. At the moment, our police forces have been given, it's quite obvious to me, even if they won't tell you themselves, they have been given orders from on high to go softly, softly with any sort of Muslim misdemeanours. And we're seeing the results of that, where Muslims feel they can get away now with an awful lot of things that we just couldn't get away with. It is like a two-tier system. And that's bad enough. If Muslims misbehave and they're not punished for it, that sends out one signal. But then when we have people like ourselves that actually stand up to this and say, you know, this isn't right, then we're the ones that get accused of religiously aggravated harassment. why I use those words, I don't know. It's almost as if I'd been accused of something like that personally. But there we go. That's
you know,
a story for another day.
And we're only in stage two, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be moving on to stage four after the top of the hour. But Tim, Rem Soldier, he brought up a really good point. And it backs up my sentiment. Rem Soldier says, I firmly believe the more actions in the name of Islam will help to kill Islam. And I agree with that. Like, bring it on. Like, don't sit there and whinge and whine about, you know, we're in the stage one, stage two scenario.
Yeah, I mean,
no, bring it on. Like,
I mean,
show us what you're all about, and let's put this to bed forever.
Yeah. One of the things I was talking about to a senior member of the EDL only today was the fact that when the murder of Lee Rigby happened in Woolwich back in May, there was a huge, huge spike of people who started to say, what is happening here? And there was a huge, huge spike in interest in groups like the EDL. And a lot of other pointers which led me to think that, yeah, you know, if anything good at all comes out of the murder of drummer Lee Rigby, it will be in this trial where the murderers, Michael Adebolajo and the other guy whose name I can never remember, will condemn themselves out of their own mouths. All right, if they're not found guilty, that will be a travesty of justice. But what I'm hoping will come out during the trial is the fact that it was Islam that was behind it all the time, exactly as the EDL said, and completely not as David Cameron said. And if we can get enough people to realize it, we'll be another big stage on the way. But as Remy Soldier says, we may well have to go through some atrocities which might be even worse than what we've seen to date, until people finally get it and finally rouse themselves and say, this is too important for me to turn a blind eye anymore. And somebody else put in the chat room, I'll see if I can find it, that a lot of people don't speak out. Dodgy Dave, a lot of people don't speak out because of fear of losing their jobs. Now, that's certainly very true. Now, I'm in a fortunate position in that I don't have to worry about that because I've been self-employed for
and
a long
so
time.
So am I. I'm retired on a personal pension, so I'm protected that way. Yeah.
Well,
I just do freelance stuff. Yeah.
Especially in certain occupations, like, for example, if you work for a local council, especially if you're in the education sector, there's probably a whole bunch of things, but those are two that spring to mind. Obviously, if you're in the police, you can't say a great deal. But in local and national politics, or certainly in local politics, and in the education sector, to speak out on such a thing and to take any kind of point of view, apart from the politically correct view, is a career killer. If that became known amongst your colleagues, you would very rapidly, if not actually be disciplined and lose your job outright, you would be, use a phrase that we use over here, you'd be sent to Coventry or shunned by your colleagues.
Absolutely, yeah. Tim. And Tim and I, we were speaking earlier because we were doing the tee-up for the program today, and I was bringing up to Tim that wouldn't it be interesting that if you had to put on a job application your previous employment and what was your position, and you wrote down counter jihadist. Wow.
Yeah. Well, quite. And yes, a lot of people at the moment are frightened to speak up because it's more important to them that they're able to put meat on the table, keep their families fed and housed, roof over their heads, to be able to, to do all the things that they have got used to. Like I say, we've had 70 years without a major war in this country. And I'm sure it's broadly true in most Western countries. Or I know there's specific local conflicts and so on, but I'm not going into that. I'm talking about major international warfare. And we've had 70 years where we haven't had to worry about that, and we've taken a lot of the comforts that we have now for granted. But all these are going to be taken away from us if we do not solve this specific problem. Everything that everything that we have and that we have had all our lives will be taken away from us. And our legacy that we would leave for our children and our grandchildren will be taken away. If we don't fight for it now, everybody has to do this.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And what I want to do, Tim, is I want to take us to a break because we're going to be moving into a stage 3 on the other side of the hour. But closing out stage 2, people, I want you to pay attention to what Tim and myself are discussing, prophesizing, efforts to convert alienated segments, revisionist efforts to Islamize history, efforts to destroy historic evidence, and we saw that in Afghanistan, increased anti-Western propaganda, efforts to recruit allies, attempts to indoctrinate children, we're seeing that in our public schools, increased efforts to intimidate, silence, and eliminate non-Muslims, efforts to introduce blasphemy, continued focus for enlarging Muslim population by increasing Muslim births and immigration, use of charities, and Tim and I discussed that, to fund jihad, covert efforts to bring about the destruction of whole society from within, development of Muslim political base, Islamic financial networks, highly visible assassination of critics, tolerance of non-Muslims diminished, greater jihad to adopt strict Islamic conduct, clandestine amassing of weapons and explosives in hidden locations, overt disregard, rejection of non-Muslim society's legal system and their culture, efforts to undermine and destroy power base of non-Muslim religions, including and especially Jews and Christians. Is there a pattern here? Theo van Gogh is murdered in the Netherlands for insulting Islam. The Organization of the Islamic Conference demands anti-blasphemy laws. through the United Nations. France is set afire regularly by quote-unquote youths, and the rise of honor killings and that's dishonor killings. The Holocaust denial, anti-Semitism, deception are either tenets of Islam, hatred towards Christians and Jews and Hindus and Buddhists. The pattern of all to see is on the rise of Islamic intolerance and the covert cultural jihad to remake host societies into a Sharia-compliant world, to remove host the host sovereignty. This is, ladies and gentlemen, this is the four stages of Islam. Tim and I, we covered stage one and we covered stage two. I'm going to give Tim and myself and yourselves a chance, though, to come up for a little bit of air, and we're going to take a break, and we're moving into stage three. What do you think, Tim?
Yeah, sounds good. So what are we talking about? About 3 minutes, and then we'll be back on to stage three.
We
will
be back here in 3 minutes and 54 seconds. And when Tim first joined me as a guest on the Red Fox Blogger, I was scratching my head going, oh, what song could I find for Tim to play for the break? And I came across this, and I think you all will enjoy it. I think Tim and myself will ensure you enjoy it. And this is I'm the Cat by Jackson Brown. And we'll see you back here in a little under 4 minutes.
Okay.
Baby, I'm around you enough to know when you're coming down. I am there with a smile prepared to bring you around. You're thinking that you've got me trained, I'm aware of that. But when you need your outlook changed, baby, I'm the cat. Baby, I'm allowed to be late when I'm coming home. You know I'll be there when I want to, and you let me roam. You think you've got me figured out, I don't know about that. But when you wanna twist and shout, baby, I'm the cat. Baby, I might not be all that your fortune cookie promised you, but I will do. I'm the cat. Baby, I'm the cat. Oh yeah. Bye.
to welcome back everybody to the Red Fox Blogger on the Monday edition. On Mondays, as you know, I am the frontman for the program, but your fellow host, two of them, that's Tim Burton and Kel Fritzy. I am very pleased, though, to be the voice for the Red Fox Blogger, and I'm very grateful that Tim Burton of Freedom Loving Infidel can join me every Monday afternoon and bring to you his perspective of what is going on within the realm of Islam. It's quite a devastating entity that we're facing right now. I am rather humbled that we have so many people joining Tim and myself in the chat room. And I want to thank Army of British News. I want to thank Dodgy Dave. Well, I shouldn't say I because it's not Cal Fritzy's show. It's Tim and Cal's show. So Tim and myself, we want to thank all of you fine folks for being here. East Anglian EDL Radio Show, No Surrender Ever, Jeff. Welcome, guest. Welcome, Lucha Dora. And moving forward, Reem Soldier, who always contributes to the chat room. The Tim Burton Radio Show. Who's that? Oh, I don't know. I think that guy is, I don't know. He's some sort of cat that tries to fit his way through the cat door and get to the East Anglian EDL Radio Show and to the Red Fox Blogger. And, of course, I have to thank Ken McClintock of the Exceptional Conservative. And Vito Esposito walked in, and he said, Kel, infidels are watching you. And I always reply back, Vito, I hope so. Because what we do here on the counter-jihadist programs is that we are informing you as to what is going on out there. And Tim and myself, we are covering the four stages of Islamic conquest. We covered stage one, and we covered stage two during the first hour of the program, and now we are moving into stage three. And hi, Tim. Welcome back.
Hello there, Kel. I certainly appreciated that little tune. anything cat related is fine with me. So thanks for that. Are you still there, Kel?
I was, yeah. Yeah, we're into the second hour, and now we're moving into stage three, and that's open war with leadership and culture, and open violence to impose Sharia law and associated cultural restrictions, rejection of host government, subjugation, and other religions and customs. And the bullet points I have here, Tim, intentional efforts to undermine the host government and culture, acts of barbarity to intimidate citizens and foster fear and submission, open and covert efforts to cause economic collapse of the society. All opposition is challenged and either eradicated or silenced. Mass execution of non-Muslims. And these are just half the bullet points. So stage
well,
three, open war with leadership and culture. What do you think,
okay,
Tim?
Well, I think we'd both be agreed that stages one and two, we're somewhere in between that in a lot of the Western countries that we look at today. And if we try and say, well, looking all down those bullet points, whereabouts are we? I think we would all agree or all identify with some, if not all, of the bullet points in stages one and two. But stage three, we certainly haven't quite got to in the UK and certainly in Canada, to my knowledge, and in the other major Western cultures such as America
and
Australia.
We're well into stage two.
Well, yes, but the point is, if we don't do anything about this now, right now, in order to stop it going any further, we will end up in stage three. Now, the reason I say that is you've only got to look at, let me take an example, which is one I like to use, which is Lebanon, because the changes that took place there are within living memory. About one, maybe two generations ago, we're talking about 50, 60 years ago, where Lebanon was a majority Christian country. And for reasons that I won't go into here, they opened up the doors and took in a lot of Muslims, to the point where when Muslims reached a certain tipping point for them, they
explain Lebanon, not densely, but just briefly explain that Lebanon was a Christian society.
Oh, yes. Yeah. In fact, it was so westernized at one stage that the capital of Lebanon, which was Beirut, well, it still is, the capital Beirut was once known as the Paris of the East, because it was so not so much multicultural, but it was cosmopolitan, a big melting pot of people who all pretty much got on well together, to the point where you could go into Beirut and feel as if you were in any Western capital, perhaps slightly more exotic in some ways, but nevertheless very friendly and open to people from Western cultures who wanted to go there and visit. And then Muslims became a much larger part of the population, and when they reached a slightly higher, I won't go into exact percentage points, but when they got to the point where they felt sufficiently confident and emboldened, they started to move to what we see described here as stage three, open war with the leadership, the existing leadership and culture. And what happened, and as I say, this is within living memory, a couple of generations ago, caused a very, very bloody civil war that lasted, 20 years? Something like that.
It was about 20 years. Yeah.
That's right. And in that time, Lebanon was pretty much destroyed. All the major centers of population were destroyed. The capital was just a pile of rubble, basically. And that is what we can expect to see if we do not turn round the problem while it is still in stages one and two. We'll move on to the bullet points that you were starting to go through here.
That is stage three, and Lebanon is a victim of that, and Afghanistan as well. Afghanistan was a truly democratic society in the 1950s and 1960s until the Taliban moved in, and we saw what happened to the Buddha statues there in Afghanistan, and they're determined to destroy the churches, synagogues, any other Muslim institution. That would be stage three. And women being restricted in accordance with Sharia law, and that is, of course, covering them up because the Muslim men cannot keep their hands off the women otherwise. I don't know. That is just absolute insanity. It's not even endorsed in the Quran, the evil green book, that women have to cover up the way they do. But, there would be a large-scale destruction of population. There would be assassinations. There would be bombings. We would witness the toppling of government and usurpation of political power. And, of course, we would see the imposition of Sharia law.
I was going to say, certainly in Lebanon, every one of those bullet points came to pass. Afghanistan, I wasn't going to use that as an example only because Lebanon was such a westernized society, and I'm sure everybody who lived there in the 1950s or thereabouts thought, you know, it was maybe they think that people in London think today, that such a thing could never happen to them. And of course, now we're starting to see similar things in Syria. It's not quite the same situation in Syria because it's different. They're not necessarily, it's not like they're overturning a majority Christian population like it was in Lebanon. But nevertheless, when you get to the point where devout Muslims feel that they have something to gain by going for all-out warfare, then they will. They will go all out for it. They don't have any of the reservations that we in our so-called more civilized countries have. They will just go out and out. They'll think absolutely nothing of slaughtering people in their hundreds and thousands. actions in order to get the goal that they want. And ultimately, if you caught one and said, why are you doing this? He would say, I'm doing it because Allah wills it. It's in the Quran. It's the example of my Prophet Muhammad. And it's the best possible course of conduct that I could hope to emulate. And that's what you're up against. They don't think they're doing anything wrong when they slaughter people in their hundreds and thousands in order to bring Sharia to the country they happen to be in. They don't see anything wrong with it at all.
No, and that's exactly why I and it's amazing because I put in the show highlights. We have the watches, but they have the time, and that is brilliant that Agador brought that up. And I also want to welcome Agador to our show. He just joined us, and I also want to thank Eric Kyle who just joined us. So thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for being here. We appreciate that. Tim and myself, we work so hard on these programs, and for you to take the time out of your busy day to join us is very much appreciated. And Tim, it's true.
Yep.
We have the watches.
Yeah.
They have the time.
Yeah, one of the other things that's in the chat room, Remy Soldier again is saying, I wonder what our great grandfathers who went over the top would want us to do. I expect they would say it's our turn to go over the top and get on with it. And I think he's absolutely right. We are going to have to take that step and step out of our comfort zones and fight this evil. Now, you and I and all the other people who would fall into the category of counter-jihadists, we are starting to do that. We do it in our own way to a greater or lesser extent, depending on our resources and what other things we have going on in our life. But we have made a start, and we are the ones that have to show the way forward so that when everybody else sees what we are doing and realizes that this is not an insurmountable problem, this can be dealt with. Islam can be defeated, but we all have to play our part. And I'm certainly playing my part, and I'm starting to feel the consequences of it right now. I won't go into my personal details, but you may be assured that I am certainly starting to feel the consequences of it now. And other people in the counter-jihadist movement will feel those consequences in due course. The people who have so much in the way of vested interests who would allow Muslims to get away with what they do and destroy our society, they are not about to lie down and roll over. They are going to fight. They are going to play dirty. And we, in the front line of the counter-jihad, are going to suffer. The population is going to suffer because, as Remy Soldier said, we are probably going to see many more atrocities, which may even be worse than the ones that we've seen now in terms of 7/7. Heaven forbid that we ever get something that's as bad as 9/11 happening on British soil or Canadian soil or Australian soil or any of the other Western countries that are subject to the Islamic scourge, but you cannot rule it out. And we're in the front line, and it's going to be hard for a lot of people, and that's what we're here for. We are here just to remind everybody that this is a problem that can be defeated, and we will be talking more about the steps we can take, but we have to recognize what is happening. You have to know your enemy. You have to understand the patterns of their behavior before you can formulate a plan. And as Remy Soldier said, it's one thing having a plan, it's another thing getting the plan implemented. I agree entirely. But before you can get a plan implemented, you have to have a plan. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to develop that plan, and then by hook or by crook, we are going to get that plan implemented. But we have to develop that plan. And knowing,
and that's exactly it. And I love the post that Army, British News, and Rem Soldier have and Eric Kyle have been putting in the chat room is that David Cameron is he's going to be the one that brings down England in particular, and Barack Hussein Obama in the United States, he will bring down the great United States of America. And what he's doing, I don't want to delve into this too deeply, Tim, because we are talking about the four stages of Islam. But Barack Hussein Obama has been an absolute disaster on the world stage in foreign policy. And these are supposed leaders that are supposed to be out there and protecting the interests of their countries. And they're not. I am shocked and flabbergasted by David Cameron and Barack Hussein Obama. I don't even I said this on Jeff's show. I think it was Friday. I said that I'm not going to offer them honorifics. Barack Hussein Obama he does not deserve the honorific of being president. David Cameron does not deserve the honorific of being prime minister. But we're moving on into stage four. But before we leave stage three, that is, remember, folks, keep this in mind, large-scale destruction of population, assassinations, bombings, toppling of government, and usurpation of political power, imposition of Sharia law. And Tim, what I did, I put the link for the religionofpeace.com in the chat room for everybody to...
It's worth noting here that when this article was written, which was back in 2010, the reference to the Religion of Peace referred to the little box that, if I'm sure most of our listeners know the site, you have a little box that ticks up every day with the fatal attacks that are carried out by Muslims in the name of Islam. And in 2010, when this list was put together, it was talking about more than 14,000 attacks since September 2001. And it's worth remembering that in the intervening 3 years, nearly 4 years, we are now up to the 22,000 mark. So that's an extra, forget the 14,000 figure, you can add an extra 8,000 on top of that. So what was occurring in 2010 and was seen as a pattern in 2010 has increased. It's not the same rate, it's increased at a slightly greater rate since this article was written. So the things that were taking place there are taking place on the same scale or even a slightly greater scale compared to the time between 2001 and 2010. So it's worth remembering that this is not like a snapshot of something happening in time. This is a process that is going on now, and
let's get it right. Islamic terrorist attacks, they have carried out more than 22,023 deadly terror attacks since 9/11. Let's go over the weekly jihad report, shall we? And this is from November 30th to December 6th. Jihad attack, 50. Allahu Akbar's 10. Dead bodies, 253. Critically injured, 556.
Okay. I'm just bringing this up myself.
The jihadists, they're rather busy. Yeah, they're out there.
They're busy. Well, they don't stop. We have to recognize they are not going to stop on their own. We are going to be the ones to have to stop them. And the very first thing we have to do is to make everybody aware of what's going on, because if people are not aware, nothing is going to happen. When people are aware, that's when we can start making things physically happen. And if we just bring these kind of things to their attention, it's a start. I'm sure, actually, most of the people who are listening are aware of the Religion of Peace website, but there may be one or two people out there who aren't aware of it. And if this is the first time you've come across this website, I can highly recommend it. It's kept up to date. There are new articles every day, new happenings from around the world, which are due to our Muslim brothers doing what they do best, which is killing, murdering, blowing people up, shooting and generally creating chaos and mayhem. That's what they do best. And the site also gives useful links to other websites which are well worth looking at. They've got a very good list of articles and commentary, which again is updated on a daily basis and includes articles from Jihad Watch, Atlas Shrugs, Gatestone Institute, the Muslim Issue.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We are at the bottom of the hour, and we're going to be covering stage four at this point. We have been discussing stage three, and now Tim and myself are moving into stage four in a moment. But stage three, and Tim and myself, we were discussing the religionofpeace.com, and I posted the link in the chat room. It keeps track of a number of violent jihadist attacks as best as it can. What is occurring is that it's inestimable. It's hard to keep track of these guys. The Religion of Peace, they try to keep track of everything, but it's estimable in that attacks occur every single day. There is an honor killing every 2 minutes in the Islamic realm. I hate that term, but that's the only one I can use. You have to visit the Religion of Peace site, because it talks about what happens when Christians, Jews, Hindus, Buddhists, animists, and atheists meet with death, property destruction or confiscation, forced conversion, rape, excessive taxation, i.e. the jizya, enslavement, riotous mobs, and various other forms of Islam, injustice at the hands of Muslims in Sudan, Philippines, Kenya, Malaysia, India, and don't let us forget the death to apostates the world over. Do you want this happening in England? Do you want this happening in the United States? Do you want this happening in Canada? Do you want this happening in Australia? Do you really want this for your children? I don't think you do. That's why people like Tim and myself are here on the Red Fox Blogger and East Anglian EDL Radio Show and Radio Jihad Network. We're here to let you know exactly what is going on out there, because if we don't do something, our children will never be able to look at us with respect again, because we will never be able to look them in the eye, because you sat back and you did nothing. There is nothing wrong with being a counter-jihadist. We are at a critical juncture in our history right now, and you can stand up, and you can do something about it. I want to rein myself in. Sorry, Tim.
What, my little shrinking violet, Kel Fritzy?
I'm a shrinking violet. But we are moving into stage four, and that is the totalitarian Islamic theocracy, and that is Sharia becomes the law of the land. We saw that in Lebanon. We saw that in Afghanistan. We're seeing that all over the place. All non-Islamic human rights are canceled. Oh, we're seeing that 1618, the UN. Enslavement and genocide of non-Muslim populations. Freedom of speech and the press eradicated. And hey, Tim, there we go, out the window, huh? Mm-hmm. All religions and other than Islam are forbidden and destroyed. Oh, we saw, the Buddhist temples. Yeah, in Afghanistan. Yeah, I brought that up earlier. Oh, here we go. Destruction of all evidence of non-Muslim culture, populations, and symbols in countries, Buddhists, houses of worship, art, artistry, etc. And Tim, this is our stage four.
Yes, indeed. And you only have to look at any Islamic country to see that those stages, every single one of those bullet points has resonance in any Islamic country to some degree or another. Afghanistan, of course, the destruction of all evidence of the Bamiyan Buddhas. That's one obvious one I can think of for Afghanistan. We're talking about all religions other than Islam are forbidden and destroyed. Again, that's pretty much every Islamic country I can think of. There are Islamic majority countries. I'm thinking perhaps what Robert Spencer laughingly refers to as modern moderate Malaysia, where you get a little bit of tolerance insofar as other religions are allowed. But if any member of a non-Muslim religion pokes their head above the parapet, he quickly gets it shot off. And we're starting to see, even in modern moderate Malaysia and Indonesia as well, we're starting to see Christian churches being destroyed, the rise of much less tolerant forms of, well, I say a less tolerant form of Islam. We're starting to see real Islam come out from the iron fist, that's coming out from the velvet glove, because they can, because they know that once they get beyond a certain point, they can pretty much do what they want, and the non-Muslims in that society, they either have to accept the Islamic way or the highway. So we're starting to see that now in Malaysia and Indonesia, and I personally have noticed a huge uptick in social media, because as you know, I maintain Twitter accounts, Facebook accounts, and so on, and particularly with the Twitter accounts, I'm seeing a lot of my death threats come from Malaysia, and it's something that's only happened within the last 6 to 12 months, a big uptick of death threats from a country which was formerly pretty tolerant towards non-Muslims, Christians, Jews, Buddhists, that is becoming very, very much less tolerant, and people there who are not Muslim are starting to fear for their lives. And it's going to deteriorate quite quickly over there if these patterns are anything to go by. But all those bullet points, you can just see them to one stage, to one at some point or another, you will see evidence of those bullet points in pretty much every Islamic country in the world, every one.
Oh, and that's the thing. If we reach a point of stage 4, we are going to be giving it up. I have spoken with other people about this, and I have spoken about the 4 points, and I have asked them, where do you think we are? Okay, we obviously embrace stage 1. What about stage 2? And I think we're there. I think we're prophetizing increases, efforts to convert alienated segments. Yeah, we're seeing that in the American and Canadian and English prisons. We're seeing these open wars, stage 3, intentional efforts to undermine the host government and culture. Are we, Tim, do you think that we're sitting between stage 2 and stage 3 at this point?
I wouldn't go so far as to say stage, well, it depends which country you're talking about specifically. We're anywhere near,
you're right.
But I was going to say, I can't think of, well, certainly not in the major Western countries we discuss, which is Britain, Canada, America, and Australia, where you could say we're in stage 3. We've certainly got enclaves developing in all those countries, where the Muslims in those enclaves are very keen on getting Sharia law to be the main form of law in those enclaves, and certainly over here, the British government is actually at the moment letting them get on with it, which I think is suicidal, really. There should be no place for Sharia law anywhere in any Western country in any way, shape or form. And anybody who promotes Sharia law should very quickly find that they have their citizenship revoked and they're booted out of the country. And if we're talking about the promotion of Sharia law or any jihad or Islamic supremacism against non-Muslims being taught in any mosque in a Western country, along with the banning of Sharia law, we should have laws put into place where that mosque is closed down in very short order, confiscated from the Muslim community, and turned into something which is of more use to the general non-Muslim community. And I've, as you know, I'm a great fan of pig racing on Fridays, and I think every mosque should be turned into a pig racing rink. Or rink, race
course,
I
should say. Oh, yes. We had a gentleman in the United States who he had a farm, and he was raising pigs, and the neighboring property, it was bought up by Muslims, and they were going to establish a mosque, and they sent him a form letter telling him that we would really appreciate if you discontinue your breeding of the pigs beside our property. And so he started us Friday night pig races.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, I think that should become the norm. And I think, you know, Muslims should realize that if they try to continue to impose Sharia law or if imams in mosques promote jihad or Islamic supremacism, they should know that they run the risk of having their mosque taken off them and either bulldozed and demolished or the building converted for use by non-Muslim groups of some description, or the whole thing just flattened to the ground and turned into something completely separate. They should know that that is what's going to happen. And you'd only need to do that a few times to see a big change in behavior. I mean, at the moment, we're just not doing it. We are letting Muslims get away with pretty much what they want. I mean, in this country, you only have to think of, let's think of an example. Just recently, when there was the spate of Muslim grooming cases, the systematic rape of young female non-Muslim children by Muslim paedophile gangs. And now these people were actually almost exclusively from the Muslim community. I won't say exclusively, but like 99% of them in this recent spate of grooming incidents were from the Muslim community. And somebody obviously floated the idea to the Muslim population, wouldn't it be nice if you imams got into your mosque on Friday and denounced the practice of Muslim paedophilia and preying on young non-Muslim girls? Wouldn't it be nice if you just told your congregations that that was a bad thing to do? And would you believe it? A lot of imams said they would not take part in such a project. They felt that it would be demeaning and that it would stigmatize Muslims. Instead of holding their hands up and saying, yeah, we have a problem in the Muslim community that we ought to be addressing and that we ought to be taking care of in-house so that the infidels don't have to, we should be standing up and saying to our congregations that the rape and grooming of non-Muslim children by Muslim paedophiles is wrong. But a lot of imams wouldn't do that. And
no, of course they would not. They would have the idea of proposing such a thing.
Yeah.
And
the point
because the Abachi boys in particular are so prolific within their culture.
Well,
and that's the thing.
I'm just saying we missed a huge opportunity there where we could have said, well, if you don't do it, if your mosque has not carried out this program, you know, we could have said we are going to go in and make sure that you carry out that program that we've asked you to do in your mosque. And if your mosque doesn't carry it out so that every attendee of your mosque or regular attendee of your mosque is exposed to that message, we'll close your mosque and we'll take it off you.
Yeah.
We missed a huge opportunity, and I think it's a great shame that we didn't stand up at that point and take it. Okay, I know we don't have the political will in this country to do this at the moment, but when we do get the political will, that will be the kind of thing we are going to need to do. We are going to have to make it quite clear that the practices that Muslims have been getting away with for the last 20 or 30 years, they're just simply going to have to stop. And anybody who disagrees with that needs to get the hell out of our country. We should be saying
exactly.
that out loud.
Exactly. We are down to our pretty much our last 17 moments of talking time, Tim.
Okay.
And just to remind people that we have been, Tim and myself, we have been discussing the four stages of Islamic conquest. And Tim, I want to leave this with the listeners as well. We covered stage one, stage two, stage three, and we're covering stage four. This is stage four of the totalitarian Islamic theocracy. We discussed about Sharia becoming the law of the land and all non-Islamic human rights canceled, enslavement and genocide of non-Muslim population, freedom of speech and press eradicated. All religions other than Islam are forbidden and destroyed. Destruction of all evidence of non-Muslim culture, populations, and symbols in country. For example, the Buddhist, the house of worship, art, and etc. However, Tim and myself, we want to leave you with this. The house of Islam means peace. That is Dar al-Islam. And that includes those nations that have submitted to Islamic rule, to the soul-crushing, liberty-condemning, discriminatory law of Sharia. The rest of the world is the house of war, Dal al-Harb, because it does not submit to Sharia and exists in a state of rebellion or war or the will of Allah. No non-Muslim state or its citizens are innocent and remain viable targets for wars for not believing in Allah. The Christian, Jewish, Coptic, Hindu, and the Zoroastrian peoples of the world have suffered under subjugation for centuries. The Dhimmi-esque are forbidden to construct houses of worship or repair existing ones. Economically crippled by the heavy jizya tax, socially humiliated, legally discriminated against, criminally targeted, and generally kept in a permanent state of weakness, fear, and vulnerability by Islamic government. And it should be noted that forced conversions, as we're seeing in Egypt, and slavery, as we see in the Sudan, are still reported today. Homosexuals have been hung in the public square in Iran. Young girls are married to old men. Apostates are threatened with death. Honor killings are routine. Women are legally second-class citizens through Muslim males. They try to insist that they be treated a little better in the West. Lovely. Yeah. Those more obvious manifestations may distract from some less obvious ones, as the lack of intellectual inquiry in science, a narrow scope of writing, but all non-art and music, sexual use and abuse of youth and women, and the disregard for personal fulfillment, joy and wonder are oppressed. Look into the eyes of a recently married 12-year-old girl to see the consequences of the moral deprivation spawned by Islam.
Yep, well said, Kel. What can I add to that except to say that this is what we can expect to see. Stages 3 and 4 will be what our children and grandchildren will see if we do not stand up and fight against the encroachment of Islam in our Western societies that is so obviously progressing from stage 1 to stage 2 in pretty much every Western country where there is a significant Muslim population. And stages 3 and stages 4 sound absolutely terrible. If you look down them, you can't believe that such things could happen to Western societies. And all I would say is, just remember what I was saying about the example of Lebanon. Kel was mentioning Afghanistan as well, but I think Lebanon is maybe a slightly better example, because it's you can see, looking back in Lebanese history, it's only taken a couple of generations to completely destroy a perfectly viable Christian majority country and turn it into an Islamic hellhole. And that's what is in store for our children and grandchildren in Western countries if we do not fight now. We have to stand up and tell everybody, everybody that we come across, whether it's a work colleague, whether you, when you have a get-together with friends and family. Somebody was saying to me, and I can't remember, it might even have been you, Kel, that just the very act of going out with a T-shirt with a slightly provocative counter-jihad message on it. Okay, you don't have to
and
be,
and you were listening to Vlad Tepes on the Red Fox blogger on Friday night, and yes, that's what he was suggesting. And Tim, thank you so very much for referencing that. I appreciate that so very much.
Yeah, well, that's it. You just need to pique people's interest. You, most of the people who are listening to this show tonight have got enough information to strike up a conversation with a friend or a colleague or a family member who doesn't know a great deal about Islam and sow the seed of interest and then a little bit of doubt about what they have been told by the political elites and mainstream media, and then maybe leave them with a little, maybe a flyer or a little business card with some useful links on it. I mean, Citizen Warrior is always a good place to go and look for advice on how to talk to people about the subject of Islam, because most people, when they if they don't know much about Islam, they tend to think it's a great big scary thing. But like most big scary things, they can be dealt with. And I used the analogy the last time I was on a radio show. I don't know if I used it on yours, Kel. It's how do you eat an elephant? And the answer to that is one mouthful at a time. One mouthful
at a
time. And pretty soon you can eat that elephant. And you just have to be the person that spoon feeds your colleagues, your friends and family and casual acquaintances. One little mouthful at a time, get them interested, get them understanding, and pretty soon you spread this through Twitter, through Facebook, through Blog Talk Media, all other forms of social media as well. You maybe, if you've got the resources, you set up your own website and you start to explore it for yourself. Do what I do. I'm planning on starting my own Blog Talk Radio program, which hopefully is going to complement the things that we talk about.
Hey, guess
here
who will be there?
Oh yeah, I'm not. I wouldn't be doing it without
such a brat.
Over my shoulder.
I know. I feel rather sorry for you and Jeff and Tommy they have a show going on. Oh, here's Kel.
Well, yeah, but the point is that we have a lot of tools at our disposal.
We do.
All social media
Absolutely.
That I've 20, 30 years ago, our ancestors, our forefathers, didn't have these kind of tools at their disposal. The civilizations that were taken over by Islam in the past 1,400 years didn't have these kind of tools at their disposal. And they didn't really know what hit them until it was too late. We have a huge opportunity insofar as there are a lot of people out there now who understand these four stages that we've just been discussing and can see the dangers approaching, and have the means and the tools to disseminate the information about those dangers in the time that we have left to us before demographics make the whole thing unmanageable. We can do it. But this program tonight, where we can just give you that little bit more information about how things will progress if we don't do something about it now, we just need to get you people out there who are listening, we need you to go and tell others. Even if you only call one person a week, it's a start.
Yes, and that's the thing, is that the Red Fox Blogger, Radio Jihad Network, East Anglian EDL Radio Show, all these fine programs out there, we're citizen journalists, and what we're doing is we're providing you with the tools to further your education. And I just want to remind people that Vito Esposito of the Radio Jihad Network, he has a show tonight at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Join us in the chat room where Vito will share with you his counter-jihadist opinions, ideas, ideologies, and articles, anything that Vito Esposito can share with you, be there, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And also join Tim and myself at the East Anglian EDL Radio Show, where we are a co-panelist with Jeff. And it is Thursdays, Fridays, and Sundays, 3:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8:30 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. So join us there as well. Okay, Tim, back to you before I close this out.
Okay, well, we've gone through those four stages. If you are looking at the document entitled Liberty versus Sharia, as we've been talking, you will see that there's a section on the end which talks a little bit about the Muslim Brotherhood. Now, I don't think we need to be looking at covering that tonight because the program length won't allow it. But nevertheless, mm-hmm. if you get an opportunity, have a look through because it's quite interesting
I
to
will.
See the network of Islamic groups and the way they all interact. And it's all part and parcel of Islam trying to get a foothold in civilized countries. They don't just come along and do it on one level. They try and infiltrate all the Western institutions, and they try and set up institutions of their own, which they then try and meld with the Western institutions. So it all appears on the surface perfectly friendly and normal. But underneath it,
yeah.
you have to remember that there is a plan, and that plan is for the destruction of our societies and the destruction of our civilization. And if we let it happen, our children and our grandchildren will never forgive us. But we don't have to let
Absolutely.
It happen. We just have to. We have to make a start, and that start is by making everybody aware of what is going on. So get out there. If you can only tell one person a week, that's helpful. If you can do more,
yeah.
Whether it's through social media, whether it's through distributing flyers or any other going out there and making and selling counter-jihadist T-shirts, whatever you can think of that you can do personally, go and do it because, you know, our civilization depends on it. We're counting on you.
Tim, you summed it up perfectly. And just to let the listeners know that Tim and myself, we get together every Monday evening and afternoon in Canada and the United States and various time zones, maybe at 6 o'clock in the morning in Australia. We appreciate the time that you take out to listen to our voices because we are sharing with you all sorts of ideologies that you can carry forth. We give you homework, and we talked about the four stages of Islam today, their Islamic four-point plan. Pay attention to these radio programs. And Tim, I want to thank you so very much once again.
Yeah, no problem. I'm just putting a link in the chat room now.
Wonderful.
To Citizen Warrior. CitizenWarrior.com for useful tips on how to talk to people about Islam, because the first thing is to get started and to get people interested. You can't sort of slap them with it all at once because they'll run away. It's a big, scary subject. Think about that elephant. Think about how you're going to feed them that elephant one mouthful at a time. And Citizen Warrior has got some good points that you can use. So have a look down there. It's got lots of useful articles, and it makes a nice complement to the show we've had tonight.
Wonderful, Tim. And thank you so much. So see you back here next Monday?
Yes, indeed. I wouldn't miss
Absolutely.
It for the world.
Absolutely. Okay.
Hello.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you. Thank you so very much for listening to the Red Fox Blogger with your hosts, Tim Burton and Kel Fritzy. We will see you back here Monday as a team, but you can also hear the musings of a Mad Fox on Friday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. So, and my guest on Friday will be Michael Green. So thank you very much for all your support of this program. Tim and myself so appreciate it. Also support the East Anglian EDL Radio Show and Radio Jihad Network. Ladies and gentlemen, have a great evening. Bye-bye.
Yeah, goodbye, everybody.